everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 279. Today we're going to be talking about Sense8 109, Death Doesn't Let You Say Goodbye. My name is Karen, and I will be filling in this week for Danielle, who is out of town, and Mitch, who is very sick, unfortunately. So,
is he dying?
I think so, but I think there's a small chance of recovery, so we're hoping for that. No, I think Mitch is fine. He has, like, Concred or something similar, so it's awful, but he will power through and be back soon, hopefully. So if you guys are all having flashbacks to Buffy, yes, I am back hosting. I'm sorry, or you're welcome, whichever one you decide to go with. I'm a super fan, obviously, and today I am also joined by fellow super fan Mai, as well as newbies Natalie and Kristen. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm slow.
As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, or find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we're going to start off with some fun facts so you get used to our voices. And Natalie, do you have another Captain America related fun fact for us, or is this going to be different this week?
No, I did not get to see the next in the chain, Captain America Civil War, at my great revisiting, but I will be seeing it on Wednesday. We had to put off the Sunday session because thankfully they're doing more than one session of each film, which is like, you know, every time we've been, there've been like maximum six people in the cinema. So I'm curious how much it affords them to roll a cinema. Like how many people buying a ticket in a cinema makes a cinema screening it's money's worth, if you know what I mean, for the cinema, because you know how much they get in ad revenue and you know how much it costs to roll each film, because seriously these have been very empty and I don't know what's wrong with everyone. Like I can't believe not everyone is flocking back to the cinema to watch Captain America the Winter Soldier on the big screen again. No, I did not get to do that on Sunday, because I was it was Father's Day and I taught my father how to make bread and that was fine. So I baked bread. That's my fun fact. It's very easy bread with no kneading involved. So if anyone wants to impress anyone with a very easy bread, I will send you the recipe.
I might take you up on that.
It's real easy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Mai, what about you? What's your fun fact this week?
Not hockey, although I did have a good time at the hockey thing. Meeting Danya.
Awesome.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I've been watching a show that I have been putting off for a very long time.
This is going to be good.
People may have also been watching Wynonna Earp.
Yeah.
Ah.
How do you feel about it?
Well, like Doc.
Yes. It is very hard not to like him.
He fits my brand. He does.
Yeah. Mine too, unfortunately.
So yeah, I'm on episode 4 and the opening where he's showing off his skills, I had some feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are feelings to be had. I feel like that show definitely gets better because I had my best friends watch it and they watched the pilot and they were like, this is really bad. I'm like, the pilot is very unfortunate. I liked it, but
I liked it
kind
too.
Of campy things and they really don't. But it just keeps getting better. And
I like both the sisters, so.
Yeah, yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's exciting.
Well, I've told you, if you like Doc from Sense8, he looks a lot hotter in my favorite show, Schitt's Creek. Tim Rose on the actor. So you should all stop watching Wynonna Earp and start watching Schitt's Creek. Or you can watch both for two different tastes.
Was that the show you thought I was going to say?
No, I was just like, you know, you saying, you know, that you've started the show that everyone, you know, other people are watching, and you said it with some trepidation. It was like, oh, whatever this is going to be controversial.
I've been putting it off for so long, so.
Yeah.
Figured good it was stuff. Time after Karen did.
Yes. And Kristen, what's your fun fact?
I yesterday was like decided that I was going to give this new Great British Baking Show a try with, you know, without Mary and with well, guess what? I went on Netflix and realized I never watched season 4. So I still had one happy season left and I'm watching it. And right now I think there's like 4 bakers left. And
what one was season 4? Was that Francis or is that Ruby? I can't.
I don't know.
I'm going to Google it.
it's quite delightful. And Andrew is my favorite, but that's probably easily guessed. He's very just adorable. But no, it's very lovely to have this wonderful surprise of one final season before Mary Berry and everybody leaves.
Season 4 is Francis and Ruby. Is there like a young girl with curly hair?
No.
Yes, that's season 4, unless they've put it in a different order.
Maybe Netflix has it like backwards.
Wait, what does Andrew look like?
He's got red hair. He's kind of young. He's like in his 20s.
Yeah, that's not season 4.
Well, they have it as like the fourth. I don't even know. Netflix has it all screwed up.
That but doesn't it's the only make any sense.
It's the only season I haven't watched, and it was not previously on here, and I've watched all the others.
That's really odd.
That's season 7.
Why would they call them different names? Like, why would they call them different names?
I have no idea. But it's good fun. I'm just happy to have had a little more time with them before they...
No, valid, but I don't understand why they would do that.
Yeah.
Oh, is this the one with Selassie?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's season 7. Why would they call it season 4? I don't understand.
I think they have it in here as like collection 4. It's like really
whatever. Oh, but it's a whatever. Good season.
That's the most recent one before the new one died.
Yeah.
Like that. This was the last, this was the swan song of the True Bake Off. Yeah.
And it's,
I like
it's
Andrew.
Been delightful.
Yeah.
Well, I can tie my fun fact into 2 out of 3 of your guys' fun facts in that I also made bread today. I made banana bread, which is the only thing with the word banana in it that I will eat or drink. And I'm really excited. And I was, I walked into Kristen's room and we were just chatting about something. And I look over at the TV and one of them is taking like cookies out of the oven or something. Biscuits, whatever. I don't even know what it was. I was hardly paying attention, but they fell on like the door and I like gasped really loud. I freaked out because I was so worried. And then it showed a second person doing the same thing and I had to walk away. It was too stressful.
He was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't.
It was the worst feeling.
Bake Off always had the issue for us of like it made me like I needed to pregame. I needed to sit down to watch it with a packet of cookies or with a sandwich or something because it was like very triggering about carbs. Like it would be like I needed to have something to eat that was appropriate for Bake Off or I would then be sad when I watched it basically.
So or make like, a cake to eat it.
Yeah. We would, and that's fine, but it was, you know, and it's not like, oh, I was trying to avoid carbs. I've never done that ever. But it was more like, oh, this is really unsatisfying because they have this food and I don't. So I would have to make like a cookie platter ready to go to watch it or like have a fresh loaf of bread or something because it was too traumatic.
That makes a lot of sense to me, actually. Cool. Well, let's jump into discussing Sense8 for the week. Like I said, we're talking about Death Doesn't Let You Say Goodbye, episode 109. In this episode, Nomi reunites with Amanita while Leto mourns the love he's lost. Meanwhile, Kala and Wolfgang both find themselves visiting the hospital, and Riley is finally forced to confront Death when she receives new information about her cluster. I'm sorry, Natalie. I feel bad every time I say that word.
It's fine. Don't worry.
We'll just whisper it from now on. Okay, let's jump right into this. And I'm actually going to do this a little out of order of what's written here because my brain just doesn't want to work that way today. So let's kick it off with Kala. Kala is praying for Rajan's father's recovery at the hospital. And I know when we were discussing this last week, Natalie, you were like 100% sure he was dead.
Yeah, I was really shocked. Even when she was having the interview with the police and stuff, and the fact that Rajan was so calm and that he was not like, I was just like, oh, really? Like, your father's dead and you're being this like chill about like this interview about, you know, wow, you might. It wasn't so much, wow, you're heartless. It was like, wow, you really love Kala to be this, you know, prioritizing of her and this calm and this professional, you know, while this is happening, like you are prioritizing Kala over everything else. And that's still true. But, you know, I fully thought even in that police interview that he was dead, that we were talking about, you know, a murder, not an attempted murder in that interview.
Mm-hmm. Are you disappointed he's not dead?
No, but I was kind of, I don't know. I was kind of like, how many repeats of this kind of, is this heavy-handed storytelling or is this intentional parallels of like Wolfgang and Kala projecting the same kind of thing, you know, situation out into the world for whatever reason of like someone getting murdered next to them and the person survives and they're in this traumatic hospital state. Like, is that intentional parallels or is that, wow, we had no idea. We don't know how to tell more than one plot. Like, like, I don't know. So I was shocked. I don't have any like judgmental emotions about it, but I was very surprised.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kristen?
Unmute. I really thought he was dead. Like, that was a lot of stab wounds. And
yeah.
And as, you know, like, I could not, you know, I obviously did not remember what was going on. And I really thought he was dead. So, like, you know, when we all of a sudden flipped to the hospital in this episode, I was like, wait, what? So, it was definitely, I completely forgot that it wasn't an initial, like, he has died.
Mm-hmm. Well, neither one of them are out of the woods yet, Felix or Rajan's father. So we'll just have to hang in there and kind of see what happens if they both end up in the same place or, you know, one is different from the other. But what I'm interested in this in particular was Rajan's reaction to all of this and his support of Kala. And I'm not surprised because he's a good person and anyone with a brain would realize like she had nothing to do with it and she's probably traumatized as well. But he is, like Natalie was saying, very calm, very professional. I mean, he gets a little heated, but there's really no discussion between them about like, well, what was my father doing there? Like, you know, do you know anything else about this? He wasn't angry at her at all. Was that surprising for you?
Not if you consider the whole, his mom. Like, I feel like maybe he's not as fond of his dad as, I don't want to say should be, because nobody should be anything. But the whole, she used to pray, but not after marrying his dad, she wasn't allowed to. So maybe he's closer to his mom and he has some feelings on that issue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm not surprised that he wasn't angry or upset with Kala because there really is no reason to be, but a lot of people in that kind of situation, you know, it's his father, kind of lose their head a little bit, and he didn't, and I just thought that was kind of cool.
Well, about the mother and the father, like, if the father was not religious at all and wasn't, and it wasn't something he came to after they married, he was always like a progressive, then surely he would not have gotten married through like a religious practice, like a, you know, ceremonial, any kind of that. And then the, so how did these two people end up together is the question. Like, you know, if this woman was like very religious and then banned from being religious after she got married, surely they weren't married through a religious ceremony. Like what was their connection? Was it like a love, you know, a love connection and they just liked each other despite that? Or was it arranged, but not really arranged through like a religious service? Like what, why are these two people married is my question. Not an important plot, yeah. Sensei.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't remember if this is answered at all, so this is not a spoiler. This is just me, you know, thinking off the top of my head. But, you know, just because he is not religious now doesn't necessarily mean, you know, back then maybe he had to conform in a certain way, and since getting married has kind of become this staunch opponent of religion and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense, but it sounded like that she was, like, as soon as they got married, was, like, had to not be religious. I don't know. Anyway, it's not important. It was just, you know, it's fine.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about Wolfgang, because he's sort of in a similar situation with Kala in that he is also visiting somebody in the hospital, and his uncle comes in while he's with Felix, which right off the bat, feels a little like you feel the tension in the room. And he basically tells Wolfgang, knock it off. I don't want to have to choose between you and my son. And the threat is very real, but he kind of, you know, makes it feel like it's how much he loves Wolfgang. And I just wanted to know if you guys kind of got that sense, or if this veiled threat was a little more threatening than you wanted to let on.
I mean, I thought that his henchman was going to like pull out Felix's breathing tube right there in the room. So I would say it was quite threatening.
What about you, Kristen?
Yeah, I definitely didn't think he was bringing him tea or anything.
Yeah.
Like it's not as subtle as it could have been. I don't know. It didn't come off as subtle to me. It just seemed pretty intimidating.
I mean, don't make me choose because I won't choose you.
I don't know any mobsters, you know, but, you know, this kind of situation is always portrayed as in the person really believes that, you know, like, oh, I do love you so much, but for honor, I will shoot you, you know, like, and it actually, it's always played as like a very sincere thing, not like a, like what he's saying is untrue. It's always played as like, yeah, I do love you, but this is the consequences of the world that we live in. And it's like, oh, how sad, I've had to shoot my beloved nephew, I'm crying, you know.
I believe they call that a sociopath.
Yeah. Anyway,
but that's pretty fair. I'm guessing we're all hoping Felix pulls through, even if we don't necessarily care about Rajan's father.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for Wolfgang's sake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got a good buddy there, so.
Yeah.
But speaking of people being pulled apart, we got to talk about Leto and how very sad this was for
him.
He
is so sad.
He is so very dramatic, so too, which, like, kind of annoys me sometimes, but I still love him for it, but he is a drama queen.
Yeah.
See, go ahead.
When he cries, it's like Willow. Like when Leto cries,
really?
I get so upset. Yeah, I just want to like cry with him. It's so ridiculous, but it's, you know, he's so Leto. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, and I mean, he is very upset, and rightfully so. He lost Hernando, which is like, I mean, I'm sorry for your loss, man, because Hernando is the greatest. And he kind of goes to the bar and is talking with this bartender, as you usually do when you're drunk and drinking alone and have had a really shitty day. And he's really rude to the bartender, and he obviously, he doesn't want it to be apparent that he's gay. The bartender picks up on it right away and is willing to go hook up with him in the bathroom, which is whatever, but Leto is very repressed here, and it's hard to see him that way, because I don't know if it's necessarily... A lot of people who are in the closet tend to be homophobic or tend to turn that in on themselves. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case here, because he's not fighting against the fact that he's gay. He just wants to keep it secret. But even so, it's very hard to see him so angry with this bartender after, like, you know, pushing back on his advances.
Yeah. He, it's clearly not, oh, he believes being gay is wrong. Like, that is not what I got from that scene at all. It was like that he was performing that he believed being gay was wrong in order to keep himself in the closet, which does have some internalized, like, the fact that he's not willing to come out is still internalized homophobia, but it's not, I don't think he walks around, you know, every day feeling that way, like he said to the bartender, like that was a performance.
Right.
Yeah.
His
breakdown was very interesting to me in terms of like the helplessness. Mm-hmm. And it definitely cements a few thoughts that I'd had about him and about like the dynamic between him and Hernando. Like, it's interesting, you know, that the part that is you guys' favorite scene is the part of this show that I had seen gift the most. I've seen this one scene on repeat many, many times, but I did not expect this context of it. So we shall get to that when you're doing your scene. Yeah, the dynamic between him, Leto, and Hernando of this big sort of heroic, burly jock kind of character being this pathetic, emotional, fragile mess, totally in awe of this sharp little genius, is a wonderful dynamic, and I like it a lot.
So do I. One part during his breakdown always really stands out to me, and I kind of wanted your take on this. It's when he puts the gun in his mouth, and obviously, like, it's a lighter, and he knows it's a lighter too, but that, like, image and the fact that he was doing it even so kind of sits with me weird, and I don't know if anybody else feels that way.
Did he know it was a lighter?
I don't think he knew it was a lighter.
No. How could he not know it was a lighter?
Why would
though?
It be surprise. A random gun in his house? Like there's
maybe.
I also think that he thought it was genuine, but maybe it was just because he was so drunk that he forgot. He was like,
yeah,
oh,
and
God.
That asshole had been in their house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Because like he says after he pulls the trigger, he says like it's a fake.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wasn't entirely sure if he knew. And
I can believe that he's so drunk he doesn't realize the difference, because, like, first of all,
the
weight of a real gun.
Creepy and...
Yeah, I think they were trying to trick us, but, like, in my head, Leto knew, except for maybe the fact that he was super drunk. Because, like, the weight of a real gun is going to feel different than a fake one that's really a lighter. And, like, for him to have a real gun around...
I mean, he handles only fake guns, so.
Yeah.
Could have been.
I thought he was going to climb over the edge of the balcony, to be honest. Like when he was climbing up on the balcony, I thought he was going to climb over the edge of the balcony, and that made me more scared. But I don't know. It was
not a good scene.
It was weirdly realistic, like of him just like screaming into nowhere and just like being like his like weird broken crying and just lying on the floor. I was just like, this is a very accurate portrayal of a depressive breakdown to mm-hmm. me, at least. Like, I don't know if some people thought it was not, but to me, like a lot of the actions, not like a lot of the body language, was really accurate, and I was for that kind of emotional state of heartbreak, just like wandering aimlessly, being like, I was just like, yeah, I feel you. Fake guns aside, but I feel you. Though the pouring all of that margarita mix, like it's like into like was like pretty gross, but.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked that part, actually. But, you know, and we know that Leto has struggled, obviously, with the idea of coming out and all of that stuff. But, I mean, if we're to think that he thought the gun was real, it kind of shows he's dealing with demons a lot darker than maybe we initially thought. And that Hernando is really the person holding him together. And without him, you know, Leto kind of doesn't know what to do with himself. And that, I think you're right. The things that he was doing and the range of emotions between like utter just sadness and then anger and, you know, him fiddling with the knobs on the tub and everything, like all of that was just, it was so real to me. And it was sad that he feels this lost without Hernando. But, you know, I'm not surprised. We do get a flashback. This is kind of, you know, going into Nomi's story as well, because we get a flashback to Leto and Hernando's first date, where we kind of see these two, I don't know, like falling in love with each other, I think, right from the get-go. And it's very cerebral, which I really loved and doesn't surprise me because, like you were saying, Hernando is a genius and he's amazing. I loved this flashback. I thought it was really beautiful to see where they started. And this is also where Nomi comes into the picture and the two of them talk. So I know, Kristen, this was actually your favorite scene. So you can either talk about it a little bit here or later, up to you.
It's just, I really, really love watching these two have this moment because, like, when I think about the Sensates in general, like, the two that I don't necessarily think about as, like, crossing paths are Nomi and Leto because they don't, for some reason, like, they just don't feel like they're having the same struggle. Nomi is so in touch with who she is and knows who she is, and, like, this whole surgery thing has made her question her brain, but she knows who she is. And Leto is so lost, and he wants to be everyone else wants him to be, but he also wants Hernando and needs Hernando. So it's like, for me, they're so different, and to see them have this moment where they're both kind of feeling the same thing and they're both kind of just struggling with accepting what the future is going to bring for them and does it mean that they're going to lose, you know, what they had planned. You know, Leto had planned all the stuff with Hernando and Nomi has these plans with Amanita and wants to, you know, be with her, and she's afraid that this is going to change all of that and they may never get back to that normal. And yeah, this scene is just really beautiful because while you get some of both of their backstories, which is also great, you see them just have this moment, and I don't always pair them up when I think about all the Sensates.
The thing about this that was really interesting to me was that, like I said, Nomi is very aware that something weird is going on with her. Leto has had his own stuff going on, and he has not really questioned this at all. He's just like, oh, you know, she's like, oh, you're Leto, and he's like, oh, you're Nomi. As in, he's aware that he's having these visions of other people and stuff like that. he has not done any delving at all into like, what this means. Like, oh yeah, this is just one of my friends from my head. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he hasn't done any kind of like questioning of like what's going on. And a few of them have had that. Like Caffeus has kind of had that, and Sun, I think we've kind of had that. We haven't had too much exploration of the Nomi variety of like, am I crazy? I'm seeing things, or Will's variety of like, oh my God, I'm going to check if this is true. And, you know, he's had exposure to Jonas and then he's told Riley about that. A lot of them are still just not questioning this kind of visitation. And that's the biggest kind of speed bump for me, that I'm like, why? Like, why are you not freaking out about this or questioning in any way? Like, why are you just like, yeah, this is my friend who visits me in my brain and it's just fine, like without any information.
I wonder if that's the artist in him, you know, like he's an actor, he's used to taking on different personas and stuff, and that doesn't necessarily excuse the fact that like something batshit crazy is going on, but I wonder if that kind of lends him to accepting this a little bit more, or not finding it as weird if it was all just in his head.
Or he's just like, I have bigger problems. What, you know, what is a phantom friend compared to Anando being gone? You know?
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. Priorities.
I think one of the most interesting takeaways from Lido and Nomi's conversation is that Nomi says the worst kind of violence is the violence that we do to ourselves, which kind of feeds back into Lido's reaction to the bartender, because he doesn't want to come out, and he shouldn't have to come out before he is ready to do so. But he is so worried about not being accepted and losing his career and all of that. And I think that's why Nomi's story is so important, because we flash back to when she was in the swim club and she, you know, obviously was a boy back then in the boys' locker room, and the boys are calling her all sorts of names, and they turn the hot water on her, and she still has scars from the burns from that time. But she looks back on that and she realizes that that's when she became who she is today. Because she stood up to her father, said she wasn't going to be a part of the swim club. She just knew in that moment that what she was feeling was valid. And she used that, a moment that is literally scarring, to strengthen herself. And I think Lido kind of needed that in that moment. It's the perfect parallel. And he's not quite where she is yet, but I hope that, you know, he listened to that story.
Yeah, I mean, it is really very important that she did not want to, you know, that the shaping that her dad praised as so ideal of, you know, I became the man I am today, that she was like, wow, if this is what he means, I am so not, this is not an aim for me. This is not a good aim of something I want to become, you know, for me. And I think that was, you know, good. But
did anyone else find this scene particularly striking? Because it's kind of horrible to watch, especially because, you know, I mean, it's one thing to see a child go through that, and that is equally as horrific. But then we actually see our Nomi go through that as well, and they kind of, you know, flip back and forth, and I don't know, for some reason that really like struck in me that this was happening, and it just made it twice as horrible.
I fast forward. Seen that scene enough times, to be honest.
Yeah,
that's fair. But everything with Nomi is not completely horrible, because at least she gets to reunite with Amanita after they're separated at Amanita's mom's house. And that moment is just, I don't know, I tear up every time I watch it, because it's just like, these two are the best when they're together, you know? Mm-hmm. And for them to find each other again, it's just, it makes me so happy.
Yeah, and like the, I knew you'd be here, like, they didn't have to speak about it, she just knew, and it's just so beautiful.
I knew you'd find me.
Although that gives me Once Upon a Time flashbacks, and I'm a little triggered by it, but I'm like, oh my god, it just, like, it does something to me, like, Natalie, I know you have no idea, but just know that it's very difficult.
It's like, what?
Once upon a time, flashback. I will always find you is a line that two of the, that Snow White and Prince Charming said at least every three episodes for seven seasons. And
at least three times per episode.
It's just, whew.
What, it never got old or you're burnt out?
On oh, burnt old. Out. It got old after the second time.
It's hard.
Yeah,
it hurts. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't think that show was like for me, but you know,
that's fine. That's not for a lot of people.
I mean, that's fine. Again, we had Nomi and Will here. Well, Nomi, she didn't see Will, but she was like, "Oh yeah, I used Will's badge number to like,
yeah,
you know, put a fake tracking on myself," and I'm like. Again, like, did they exchange phone numbers? Like, how did she get this? I know that can she just, like, slip into his knowledge, you know, like.
Yeah.
Obviously, Nomi and Will are both very aware of the Sense8 problem, like, or, you know, Sense8 developments, that they're sort of aware of what's happening to them. But I feel like they haven't really been chilling. They haven't been like, oh, yeah, like, here's what we can do. Like, they haven't consciously chatted about it. So, again, this sort of feeding into their lives of, you know, of each other is becoming normal a little too fast for me without, like, a state of the union, if that makes sense.
I can sort of get that, although,
yeah,
and I guess since we're talking about Will, let's jump into there too, because he does talk to Jonas in this episode, who continues to explain the mechanics of the Sense8, and it's episode 9. And maybe it's because I've seen this season like several times that I'm like, wow, episode 9, we're still getting information about how this works. Is that, as a newbie, like, is that welcome, or have you sort of figured it out already, or, you know?
No. I want the science. Like, I'm like, yeah, this is just... And the fact that they're so accepting of it without really questioning it is, especially someone like Sun, who does not seem to, like, have a lot of time for anything, basically. You know, she's impatient and, like, very practical. There's too much acceptance of this weirdness without questioning it. Like, without questioning, am I crazy or what's going on? You know, like, I know we had a whole song about it, but a song is not a real explanation. So, you know.
I guess aside from that, you know, from the perspective of the writing, do you wish that we had gotten all this information sooner? Because episode one. Yeah, because I feel like episode 9 is, like, a long time to wait to continue to get this information.
Yeah, I want the scope of the science immediately. Even if not all of them know that, I want it for the audience. Yeah.
Right. What about you, Kristen?
Yeah.
See, I kind of like how the show introduces itself without us knowing how and why they get into each other's lives. Like, how much more fun is it to watch Wolfgang and Kala kind of, like, pop in and out at the most inopportune moments and not really understand what's going on? Like, it's entertaining because it's all fresh and new and none of them understand it. So it's okay that we don't either. It doesn't bother me at the beginning, but you are right. Like, we're up to episode 9. By now, I'd really like some concrete rules. Like, yes, they can get into each other's heads for knowledge whenever they need to, and the other person may not know it. Yes, they can physically, you know, basically physically travel to another place and touch things and, you know, tactily, like, pick things up and move them. And yes, you know, like, there are rules and ways that this works that would be nice to have, like, set in stone, so that I, as the viewer can start to say, like, why didn't, you know, why didn't Will just show up and do this? Or why can't, you know, this person do this? Or, you know, it would be nice to be able to put that all together. But I kind of get why we're still getting pieces here and there, too. So it's kind of two-handed for me. Like, yeah. I wish we had concrete rules, but I also understand why we don't.
Mine is less about, yeah, it is about the science and, you know, what they can do, what they can't do. Less about that, more about why is no one questioning this? Why is Lido and Caffeus and Sun and even Carla and Wolfgang, why is no one being like, what is going on with my brain and my life and my fake imaginary friends who appear to be real? Like, why is no one... I understand that they've all got big things going on, but I don't understand why no one's like, this immediately became the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair, especially for somebody like Lido, who, yeah, like, he's going through some stuff right now, but also, like, he's the one that's kind of delved into this the least, and it is sometimes surprising that he's just totally chill with it.
Like, I would have thought that he even sort of dismissed it as a dream or not real until Nomi comes in and sits down. And I loved the scene between him and Nomi in the art gallery. But the fact that he's like, they're just like, oh, you're so-and-so. And, you know, yeah. As in, oh, yeah, he's completely aware and accepting of this and has not questioned it at all. And I'm just like, why have you, like, why? Like, why? Why? I don't understand.
Mai, how did you feel about Will in this episode, who kind of, you know, is continuing to search for answers, and we get yet another flashback, this one involving the ever-creepy whispers and Sarah Petrell?
Oh, I like Will. I do. Mm-hmm. I wish he had less of the creepy childhood flashbacks.
Yeah. They are kind of the worst.
Yeah. I don't want to see what happened to Sarah anymore. I think we get it.
What happened to what?
The girl that is in...
Oh, yeah, that. We haven't gone into that at all. Like, well, I mean, I don't want to see it, but, like, was she a sensate that he was, you know, like, connected to? Yeah, I don't know. Again, there's a lot of, like, context that is... And if this show was, like, 10 seasons, I'd be like, okay. But I'm like, it's only 2 seasons long. Like, what? Like, where are we... Like, is the entire story of the show involved in solving this mystery, or are we going to solve the mystery and then, like, continue on? Because that's the question for me.
No comment.
Of yeah, course. Unfortunately. But, you know, seeing her there is, first of all, it is supposed to make you ask a lot of questions because you really don't know what's going on. But it is kind of horrific, and you get the sense that, I mean, you already got the sense Whispers was not a good guy, but he just seems to keep getting worse, doesn't he?
Yeah, and especially the look at me thing, because... Yeah. That's the whole deal with him. You're not supposed to let him look at you.
Mm-hmm. Cute little baby Will, though.
Oh, yeah. His hair looks adorable. So soft.
It does. And we also learn here that all the sensates in a cluster were born at the same moment.
Yeah, they took their first breath together or something.
Which is so cool.
It is cool, especially if you think about the fact that they're not sort of like they're only just realizing this, and they're however old that they are. But really, this has sort of been something that's destined from the beginning.
Yeah, that's my question as well. Like, in this episode, we did get a fair bit of scientific perspective from the different guru sensates, as I will call them. And it's sort of, basically brought up a question that I've had before, which is, are you destined to become a sensate? Is it something that is going to emerge at a point
Or is it just like you have the potential to be one? Or is it like everyone who was born at that exact moment on August 8th, so in like, you know, like 5 a.m. Icelandic time and, you know, 11 p.m. Seoul time or whatever, but that's all the same, you know, same moment. You know, sure, there's going to be more than 8 of those children in the world. Is it like all of those people have the possibility, or are you a... Were they always going to be sensates, basically? Were these people always assigned to be sensates and it came on at once?
Sho is a lot more philosophical when you start analyzing it like this than I think I yeah. ever expected it to be. Those are some pretty big questions.
I'm not sure we actually can answer that. If we can, I don't remember the answer.
Yeah. It might just be something you have to infer, you know, from...
That would be such a big question, though. About, like, yeah, whether they are, like, assigned to...
Like, whether it's, like, not necessarily genetic, but, like, is it something that they were... That their birth, like...
Like, you're predisposed, but yeah, you might not.
Yeah, like, were they always destined to be these, you know, these 8 were always going to be a cluster? It was just, you know, they were all born at this moment? Or is it, like, it could have been any 8 people that were born at that moment, and these 8 happened to be the 8 that get connected? Yeah. I don't know. I'm assuming that... I don't remember anything, so this is a guess. I'm assuming that somehow... like, these specific 8 are there. Like, I don't remember how or why, but something in me is like, it wouldn't work with just any 8 people. Like, it's got to be these 8, because everyone has people who are born at the same moment as them. Like, yeah. there were probably...
So why are I a sensate?
Right? Like, there's probably hundreds of people that were born at the exact same moment I was, but, you know, like, it... doesn't mean that I was connected to them for some reason. It's just these 8.
We're just not special.
We're not special enough. Didn't get to go to Hogwarts. I'm not a sensate. What the hell's wrong?
Oh, God.
You don't want to be a sensate. You wouldn't want that, I don't think.
I mean, I don't know. It would be kind of cool.
I would get to go to Europe without having to fly.
So. Right?
That would be kind of nifty. Okay.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Be Korean and not have to study for it. Oh, that would be cool. I would be super into that. Speaking of which, let's jump into Sun's story really quick because it's a little bit shorter before we get to the hefty storyline for this episode. So basically, Sun's still in jail. Sorry if you expected otherwise. But surprise, surprise, her father visits her and he's feeling kind of guilty.
I thought this should. Was a dream. I was like...
So are you guys surprised by this?
Yes. Considering he basically signed her up for this, mm-hmm. like, this is what he wanted, and she agreed to it, of course, but, like, this, you know, he was basically like, this is how you can save our family, and you're the only one who can, and... basically, I can live with this. And now that it's happened and she's gone through with it, now all of a sudden he has conscience about it. And it's like, oh, that's...
He probably realizes his son is a little shit and doesn't want to deal with him anymore.
Yeah. I mean,
as in, like, he's probably been in the office and been giving the kid, the boy, all the responsibilities that Sun did as her day job. And that kid's, like, failing hardcore. So...
making a total disaster of everything. Yeah, that's gotta be it. Mm-hmm.
Another part of this that really stuck out to me was when he says he's a bad person, but he was a little bit better when her mom was alive, which kind of bothers me because... Yeah.
Was he, though?
I mean, true. I mean, we know a few stories from Sun's childhood, and he was still really not great. Yeah. But you know, this is a thing, in case anybody didn't know this was a thing, about women having to do you know, emotional labor. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew you knew what I was going to say there. Yeah. And being the reason why a man is, you know, better, kinder, more empathetic when they're around. Whereas, like, shouldn't that kind of be the default? Like, shouldn't you just try to be better because you want to be better?
Yeah, side note, which I talked about with Brittany, very big theory about that. That's why everyone loves To All the Boys I've Loved Before so much, because no emotional labor is required to make Peter Kavinsky into, like, a good dude. Like, he just is, and it's not about a girl making him have a big change of heart to be a good dude, like, in any way.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's a total side note.
But that's such a good movie.
He's just not totally valid. To know his inner good dude. I just love Peter.
Okay. Right.
So, you know, if Peter Kavinsky was Son's father, this would never happen.
Never would have happened.
Yeah.
Ever. And, you know, like, this is great that her father's feeling guilty, but, like, it's kind of late. Like,
yeah. Like,
that ship has sailed.
That ship has sunk.
Yeah. Oh, true. So who knows what's going to happen with that. But let's get to Riley's story, because I'm very interested in talking about this, particularly with Natalie, because I know you like Riley, and I know that you've been asking a lot of questions about her. So we kind of see what's been going on with her, why she didn't want to return home. We meet Ursa, who is another Sense 8, who kind of warned her away from coming home. And we find out that Riley had a husband and a baby, and she visits both of their graves.
Yeah, there was a lot here. I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, so, you know, we heard Riley's stories about the troll who sung sad songs to her or whatever, you know, like, learned that that was an actual sensate who was visiting her, apparently visiting her before Riley was activated as a sensate. So that's a, or were they actually visiting in the real same reality space? I don't know. Because Riley would go to the cave, and then this woman was not physically in the cave, she was in her house, you know, like, so. Right. So there's that. And then, you know, there's been, you know, so much talk about her mother being dead, which we already knew about, that I assumed that Riley's, you know, fleeing from Iceland was to do with that. But then it was like, surprise, here is a dead husband and a baby, apparently. And that was the thing in the mountains that she was saying, you know, that she made her believe it was her fault. And, I mean, that's all very well and good. Like, you know, well, it's terrible. But, yeah, so, you know,
really?
Riley has this sad, sad, sad time, which is not very nice for her. And then, again, the friendly neighbor is, like, a wonderful support system who also cares about, like, coming to visit the grave of, yeah, like, was this his brother? Like, I don't, like, or is he just a good friend and he's just there to help that family with no real purpose other than that? But there was a lot there that surprised me, especially the stuff that the Ursa says about, you know, that she was real and that she had been basically stalking Riley her whole life, and that I think that she said Riley's mother brought her in for testing, and I'm like, did they mean being testing of a sensate, or was it, what do they say at the beginning of the episode, that BPO funds DNA testing and they do it as a front, like, oh, do you have this other genetic disease, like whatever her mother had, but they were actually looking for sensates and that this woman was, like, hiding them.
Yep.
So what's happened? I don't, like, that's a lot of info at once about Riley being thrown right into this, you know, not just her future, but her past.
Yeah, we get the answers to a lot of questions for Riley's story and her background. And I think that's really interesting. It is kind of shocking. You know, you think you kind of know who she is as as we see her, you know, working as a DJ and kind of getting closer to Will, and all of a sudden, like, bam, like, she had this whole other family. And it is surprising and very tragic, but it's this other layer to her story that I really enjoyed, is probably not the right word, but, you know, I liked having that information because it just further lets you paint a broader picture of who Riley is, and obviously explains why she didn't want to go home and all the stuff that's been sort of, you know, bothering her in the back of her head that we just had no idea about. Ursa, though, I'm assuming we don't like her very much, right, Mai? Like,
I mean, like, she uses her visiting powers to convince a small child that she's hexed.
Yeah.
Like, really? That's effective.
I mean, yeah, it was effective. Kind of traumatizing. Ursa, to me, doesn't feel like a very good person. You know, she's not Jonas. Jonas is very caring, very, you know, loving in a lot of ways. He tries to explain what he can to them, and he knows the whole situation is difficult and everybody is in a lot of danger, but it feels like he cares about Will and about Will's cluster and what they're trying to do as they come into themselves as Sense Eights. Meanwhile, Ursa is just like, I don't want to be near you guys. I don't want to be associated with you guys, which is fair. You're going to get
killed.
Yeah, and that's fair. She just wants to stay alive, but it feels much ickier.
Yeah.
And she warns them against Jonas.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That conversation between, you know, Will and his mentor, Jonas, and Riley and her mentor, Ursa, it's very heavy-handed, but it has a lot of information. Like, it's very heavy-handed, and they, you know, Ursa is claiming that Jonas and Angelica, even though Angelica died, would activate clusters in order to for that BPO to track them, like, as in they were like honey trapping them or whatever. And so that's like a whole like other thing. But, you know, Jonas seems to be against whispers. Maybe he thought that what they were doing originally was honorable, like that they were, you know, and then they got tricked, or maybe he is just evil. But what was most interesting to me was the argument about romance that they had, like that.
You know, I felt like Ursa, this was right up your alley.
Well, yeah, it was really heavy-handed. It was almost too heavy-handed for me. But the information was there in terms of, like, one perspective of it being the most pure, perfect kind of bond, and then one perspective of it being, like, really sickening and egotistical and, like, what did she say, like, the worst form of narcissism, which I totally get. Like, I'm like, oh, so, like, the only person that you can be in love with is, like, a part of yourself. Like, oh, yeah, that's fine. But then Jonas and Angelica were apparently in love, but they were not in the same cluster, as far as I know. Is that right?
No, they were.
I think they were.
No, I feel like he said that, like, people from outside the cluster, like me, can still visit if they're a sensei. I feel like he said that he was not in her cluster, but maybe that's
he was
wrong.
Talking maybe to Will, though. He's outside of Will's cluster.
Yeah, I know. I know, but I thought that he was talking about, like, what Angelica taught him. Anyway, regardless, doesn't matter. Maybe I can't remember. I'll look at it when we know more. Spoilers, I'll Wikipedia it. But yeah, that argument was real heavy-handed about, like, no, that's the best love, and, oh, don't you go falling in love with him, that's the badness. You know, what if is one of them 100% right, is one of them 100% wrong, is that going to depend on whether, you know, Jonas is evil or if Ursa's evil? Like, I don't know.
Is it just the romance reader in me that's like, clearly, Ursa wishes that she had had that connection with someone and didn't. Either that or
maybe
she's guilted by someone in her sense, in her cluster, who, like, maybe she had those feelings for and it didn't work out, or they died, or I don't know. And so that's why she's so bitter. It just seems so, like, she's so one note about it. Like, she has absolutely no, she doesn't have any sort of, like, wiggle room on this. It's like, no. It's pathological. It's the worst kind of narcissism. It's terrible. Like, don't, you know, like, what are you getting? You don't even know what you're getting yourself into, kind of thing. So I me thinks that maybe she's protesting too strongly, like something, like something red flag, you yeah. know? So
yeah. I'm not on board with the worst kind of narcissism thing.
I get it. I get the perspective.
I get it, but I don't agree with it because they're not a same people just because they're connected.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like,
I don't know if I
just suddenly started like a mental link with somebody, didn't mean I was two people.
Yeah, it's all very complicated. I suppose,
but they have kind of pitched this as it being one person, but anyway, I don't
also
know.
Also a we, but they're yeah, also it's all very just themselves.
Like, yeah. There are layers. Yeah. There are definitely layers. Yeah. Kristen, I just wanted to ask you if the romance reader inside of you also loved how Riley's husband showed up at her school on a horse.
Oh, I mean, come on. Come on.
Is he not dreamy?
Who doesn't want a husband and a pony? Like, that is every, like, you know, there are so many little girls sitting at home.
Swooning. Yeah.
Among us. Yeah. This is weird, though. Oh, it's so cool. So, did I question why the horse just walked into her school? Yes, but it's still dreamy.
So one of the most interesting things to me about getting all this information about Riley is that she's not sharing it with Will. She's connected to Caffius about it. And we figure out why, because he tells the story of how he had to give up his sister for adoption, or like his mother had to give her up, and how it, you know, it does leave a hole in your heart. And clearly a little bit different from the fact that Riley's family died. But I thought it was really sweet that these two were bonding, and that it seemed obvious to me that Kathy's story did make Riley feel better.
Well, again, I'm just like, why is Riley knows tons of details? Here's Kathy's. It's great that she has a nice friend to talk about death and loss with. I'm really appreciative of that. What's going on? Why am I in Iceland? Like, you know, like, and then she has the information. Why is no one passing actual information?
It happens off screen. Are they on an
email chain or something, and they've actually just, like, handled that off screen? Like, I don't get it. Are they in a WhatsApp group? Because that would probably, like, be their word.
Nomi is just telegraphing, this is normal, do not stress. Like, she's, like, sending, like, a giant
calming
email
vibe.
To them. Just like, yeah, like, they all know that something's going on because Nomi's just keeping them all apprised.
Yeah, they retained the information when they shared her body.
Right? Something like
yeah.
that.
Maybe.
I was just going to ask if the newbies were wondering what happened to, were wondering about the obviously pregnant mother of Caffius. So if the adoption story made sense?
Well, yeah, I feel like I knew that he had a sister. I feel like that was mentioned before. Or that we talked about that pregnancy, and it's like, well, where's the other child? So yeah, I feel like I knew there was something coming with another child. Because I guess, yeah, she was pregnant, and we talked about him having a, you know, like, oh, are they the only two family members? Because if she's pregnant, like, now, then where is that baby? But I guess I just assumed it died, so I don't know.
So this is a little bit happier of a twist, I guess, then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Adoption and happiness is definitely better than death. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that pretty much wraps up all of the major storylines for this episode. I'm sure we have, you know, a few more other things to say with our favorite scenes and favorite lines. So let's jump into those right now. Mine's really easy. Mine's just Nomi and Amanita's reunion. Like I said, it just makes me teary-eyed. I love that Nomi was like so ready to stab her until she saw who it was, and then everything was just fine and happy and dandy again for the time being. I mean, they're still on the run, but you know, at least Nomi they're is together. So
brave in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. And I just love that Amanita knew that she would be there, and it was just, it was great.
Maybe I have a secret knock.
Maybe, yeah. Hi. That would be smart. Mai, what was your favorite scene?
My actual favorite scene is your favorite line, but also the Jonas visiting Will, visiting Riley, visiting Ursa. The chain and the filming and the, yeah, everything about it.
Yeah. It would have been just easier if they could just get on a four-way call. Then again, Jonas was a little tied up, so probably not going to happen.
Where was he? I totally forgot about that till that moment. Like, that he's okay when he's visiting Will, but where he is in reality is being, like, held up and
monitored. Yeah.
So, yeah, what's going on there? Whispers have him, or is he still in, like, jail from when the police had him? Like, I don't understand.
We'll have to find out.
Natalie. They're not going to answer that.
Yeah. You tried. Nat, what's your favorite scene?
Mine was the Hernando and Lito's date in the Diego Rivera Museum. Like, Hernando's, like, talking about the story and the history and that kind of thing. And the dynamic between them that is very beautiful and obvious that, you know, Hernando is... got all of these amazing analytical skills and, you know, but emotional analytical skills about any subject. Like, we saw him doing about the wrestling, you know, Lito says, you know, sport, you know, whatever. Like, he is really a connoisseur of life, and that could very easily be, like, snobby and egocentric and, you know, like, but Lito just loves it. Like, he just... thinks it's amazing, and the way that they connect sort of on that date is, you know, then there's sex, but that's whatever. But yeah, the in front of the painting, that scene between them is just such a deep dynamic of personality types, and I like it. So I hope those crazy kids work it out.
And Kristen, yours is kind of tied into that too.
Yes. Mine, as I talked about before, is Lito and Nomi's heart-to-heart in the gallery. It's just, yeah, as I said before, it's just like a really beautiful moment for those two. And in someday, hopefully, Lito will be as happy and content with himself as Nomi is. You can only hope.
Definitely. Jumping into favorite lines now, this, my favorite line appears to be many people's favorite scene. So, and I had to do this for Danielle as well, because she loves this line. So I knew I had to pick it. It's when Lito is on the phone, leaving another voicemail for Hernando, and he goes, "Hernando, it's me. Please call me back. I lost a flip flop."
this scene, that the flip flop, is the number one thing of this show that I had seen GIFed. Like, yeah. I have seen this GIF a dozen times, like in GIF sets on Tumblr and stuff like that. And I did not know it was going to be this miserable. I thought it was going to be in, like, the position of basically the same dynamic that I'm talking about, of, like, a really pathetic kind of, you know, one character that's an emotional rock and one character that's, like, a bit hopeless. But that it would be like in a moment of like hysterical, like hysteria, but not in this way. Like, I did not know it was going to be in like the middle of a breakup and stuff like that. It makes so much sense in this way as well, but the vision that I built about this scene was not this at all. Like, it was going to be more of a, like,
I see you, villain type.
Well, kind of an attentiveness. Like, I thought it was going to be like a Nomi and Amanita style kind of like rushing to attentiveness scene with the boyfriends. But this makes sense in a different way. But this scene, the way that people have been like, oh, so cute in gift sets is I did not think this was going to be so depressing. But it is very, I felt it on a like spiritual level.
Yeah.
It's in the delivery.
This kind of hopelessness. And I feel this often. Like, I am having some real problems at the moment with like self-starting, and this I felt this on a deep level.
Same.
Yeah. Mai, what was your favorite line?
Who we are is less relevant than what we are, and what we are is different from them.
Another question for Jonas and Ursa and the BPO. What is it about sensates that they're either trying to eliminate or cultivate? Like, what is it about that power or whatever it is? Because they mention it. They mention the name of, like, the scientific, like, enzyme or what, like, whatever, like, that they...
We also saw in the last episode how Whispers was able to use a
body, yeah, like
a corpse sensate, basically, like,
yeah,
you know, like one that had no longer had control over himself. Whispers was able to use him, so that alone feels like a reason why they're hunting them.
That's true, but yeah, I think in this episode they mention the name of whatever the like,
yeah,
like DNA part or whatever it is that they do. So yeah, still curious why they're hunting them, and like what about them being different from them is like something that they want to weaponize or stop. Yeah, Kristen's point is pretty valid, but again, like there's just a lot of parts of this that don't make a ton of clear direction.
And Natalie, what's your favorite line?
Mine was also from that Nomi and Leto heart to heart, where she is talking about. Leto's talking about like what led to the emotional trauma and the breakup, and how he was scared to give up everything he's worked for and all of that. And Nomi says, yeah, I understand. Like, I totally get it. But I also, and then she says, you know, but what I've also realized, like, I realized that there's a huge difference between what we work for and what we live for. And that's pretty hard hitting in a variety of ways. Obviously in Leto's case, but in life it's probably a good thing to think about with prioritizing your emotional labor, for example. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
100% true. And Kristen?
Mine is between Sun and her father, and her father walks into that little room and says, I have not slept since you came here. And Sun says, I've never slept so well.
Sun loves prison.
She just delivers it, man. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. The look on his face, too, is just, it's priceless.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you for sharing, everybody. And as usual, if anybody would like to get into contact with us to share your favorite parts about Sense8 or, you know, ask us some questions, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Please remember to keep all of those spoiler-free for our newbies. And iTunes reviews. We would really love to get some more reviews in there and some ratings as well, because we are potentially trying to get the podcast onto Rotten Tomatoes, where we can get a little bit more of a platform. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes has changed some of their guidelines for, you know, putting reviews up and stuff about that, and podcast count, so we can be found over there. It would be really awesome to get some more ratings on iTunes, as we need 200 to be eligible, and we only have about 88 right now. So if you have not left us a review, please, please, please do that. And if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then I will make sure you find your flip-flop.
Aww.
Can't ask for anything more than that.
Flip-flop. I've definitely had some problems of like getting stuck
putting on one pant leg and then losing the energy to put on the other pant leg.
Yeah.
So I need that kind of inspiration.
Have you worn my socks lately? Sometimes I think about this randomly.
No, because they have a hole in the toe and I need to go and fix it. They're in my mending basket.
Okay.
Because I don't want to throw them out because they're your socks. So I will repair them and wear them again.
And keep wearing them. That's so nice. I think about this randomly every once in a while. Cut.
4 years ago, I accidentally stole a pair of socks from Karen when we were packing up a hotel room. And I have not returned them to her, and now I just have Karen's socks.
Yeah.
You're so cute.
All right, let's jump into some listener feedback now. Natalie, will you take this first one?
Yeah. So the first tweet is from Nurse Brack at This Is The Queer Place. and he said, I had to laugh when I saw the episode title Cell Block Tango. Referring to last week, I've always referred to Sun's cellmates as the Merry Murderesses, which is, I'm glad that someone got the, you know, like, it's a good connection. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go and watch the movie Chicago. But yeah, that's, the parallel is clear, but I can't quite imagine them all dancing in corsets the way, you know, but I don't know if Sun would go in for that, but if it's...
Yeah.
And I bet you would have done the same.
Yeah.
And Mai, will you get the second one?
Yeah. Leslie at Leslie Oliver A says, I remember when I first saw this post and I thought of the main eight. Couldn't choose, thought of the supporting roles and still can't choose. Even the fairies are exceptional in their roles. There are no poor performances in hashtag Sense8. I love them all. Even redacted for season two character.
I'm like, what fairies? But I'm like, she means the people at Pride. I'm like, are we going to go into like a
with fantasy? The edibles.
Yeah. They were great. But
they were awesome.
For a second, I was like, what? Are there really people in Riley's caves? I'm like, are elves coming? Like, I don't
know. The elves are coming.
Yeah.
Taking the Hobbit to Isengard.
Kristen, will you get this third one?
Yes, third one is from Derek at Derek12358813. And he says, cannot choose from any of the main eight. They're all impeccable characters played by outstanding actors. However, have a real soft spot for Michael X. Summers as Bug, Frema Official as Neats, and Daniela Vazquez, I'm assuming that's his Daniela, Danny, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great supporting characters with charisma beyond measure. A few
people have mentioned Bug multiple times. Does he, like, come back? I mean, that's asking for a spoiler. Or are we talking about, like, his performance in that one episode? Because it was very interesting. But people have mentioned him, like, a few times in these Twitter polls. So I'm curious.
We'll just have to see. Although sometimes even characters in a single episode can really stand out to you.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. Supernatural has that a lot. It has a lot of one-off characters, like, you know, Monster of the Week type episode. Like, you know, someone from a certain town that... That character or that actor is like a standout, like people always go back to it.
Let us remember that prior to book six, people did write fic about Blaise Sabini, and that was just a name at the time.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. He was good, Bug, but I'm just curious if that's like coming back. Yeah.
And our last tweet is from Laura Morrow at Laura Morrow 123, who says, you guys are always in my ears during key times in my life. 1, grad school, 2, student teaching, and 3, job hunting. Next, being a full-time theater teacher. I feel behind on episodes, but I have a 2.5-hour commute each day to catch up. Thanks, guys. That's awesome, and congratulations. That's really exciting.
There's a lot packed into that tweet. 2.5-hour commute each way? Like, remember what you live for, not just what you work for.
Hopefully it's 2.5 hours.
Total is still a lot, long, but good luck and spread the message of theater and art and love, you know.
And rewatchable. Okay, so final bit of our episode is Kristen's contemplations and Fisher's forecasts for Sense 8, 1-10. What is human?
I mean, I am going to... Are we talking about plot or analyzing the title? Because I never know, because I've never had to do forecasts
either or
Sense 8, and it's confusing me.
It's whatever you want it to be.
It's and it doesn't even have to make sense, because half the time, I swear...
Some of Mitch's for Buffy were fantastic in their just absolute
ridiculousness.
Yeah. Well, you know that I can't live like that, right? I can't.
Mitch is very special.
You do you.
I have no whimsy.
That's a lie.
I think that it is going to be like a lab analysis, like a lecture of some sort of lab analysis that is either going to be directly about or a parallel of whatever this thing about sensates is, as in, you know, what is human in terms of the genetic buildup or something like that of the human, you know, body, the human condition, the human capabilities, and it will either be directly about the sensates, like within that BPO organization, and you know, here's what we're, you know, trying to do, like we are creating superhumans or whatever, or it's going to be like something in the pharmaceutical company that's a parallel to that issue. That is my theory. So far, most of these have been wrong. So.
That's the fun, though. You don't have to be right. I think this kind of makes me think a little bit of like X-Men too, like.
Yeah.
Does the BPO...
I was thinking of Captain America. Like, I was like, okay. Is he, you know, yeah, that yeah. kind of, yeah.
Like, he looks human, and sensates look human, they seem human, but because they have this extra thing, are they human? Like, that's kind of what my mind goes to when I read this title. So I'm assuming that we're going to get into more of the science and probably learn a little more about what the BPO is really after and like why they feel so entitled to hunt these people down.
I'm assuming that this is going to be in a speech that's either heavily pro sensate rights or heavily against them, if you know what I mean. I feel like it's going to be severely in defense of their humanity or severely like, here's what we have to hunt them down, like against them. So,
yeah, definitely. I agree.
Cool. As always, good theories. We'll have to see what happens next week. Okay. Well, that wraps it up for us for this week. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in, listening to us ramble and talk about the show. We really appreciate it. And till next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Mai.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.